You're listening to OEA Grow, a member-led production of the Oregon Education Association and a proud member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. OEA Grow is by members, for members. In Season 13, members discuss the educator lifespan from aspiring to retiring with host Blaine Ganvoa.
Welcome to OEA Grow. Today, we are fortunate enough to have a veteran instructor with us today by the name of Anna Halsey. She comes to us from Stanfield Secondary School in Stanfield, Oregon. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you.
So, as you know, that this episode is centered around the lifespan career of an educator. So, we're really looking to deep dive into, you know, the ins and outs of your career, kind of words of wisdom can you share with other educators and future educators. So the goal is to hopefully be able to take this information and have us veteran teachers learn from the incoming and, you know, because there's been many changes throughout our careers, as you know, so, and vice versa, you know, be able to have some people in the middle of the road to the beginning and even aspiring educators who listen to this podcast to glean some information about what they can expect in the field of education and all the trials and tribulations that come with that.
Sounds great.
Okay. So first, tell us a little bit about yourself and what inspired you to become a teacher.
Okay, well, I'm just finishing up my 24th year of teaching. I started in 2000, I wanted to be a teacher probably in the mid 90s. I did daycare when my middle child was born, my daughter, in 1991. I started daycare, and slowly over the time, I ended up just taking care of teachers' kids and having them become friends and knowing about their life and their work life. And I just really admired who they were. I really just loved just being around them and being with them and loved hearing the stories of the, you know, students. When my children got old enough to be in school, then I started helping in their classrooms. And, you know, when I could, I was helping in their classrooms. And what I saw, it was just really fun. I just thought, what a fun way to spend your day. And so that really was what did it for me, is just all of the people that, you know, were in my circle at that time. And I just wanted to be like them and do what they were doing. And that's what spurred it on. I did go back to school after my kids were in school full time. I did go back to school as an adult, married with, you know, children. And that was a challenge to go back to college that way.
No, I would agree that's kind of my path as well. I was in late start and ended up going in that same direction with children and work and life so it's interesting to hear and encouraging to hear that other people were on that same path, because so often sometimes you feel like, you know, it's just you, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. And during that time when I was in school, I divorced and it was, you know, did it for as a single mom there for a while. So yeah, the beginning was challenging, but nothing that I couldn't handle. I had a lot of support from family and friends. And so it, you know, we made it through fine. I have since been married for 22 years. I have, in addition to my older two children, I have a younger child. He just turned 21 and he's off in college now. So I am officially an empty nester. And having no one at home has changed my work life as well as my personal life. So my husband and I are, of course, much more free, but I also find that I am spending a lot more time at school after school and not going home quite as quickly as I used to, because, you know, my kids are not at home anymore. So that's, or my youngest at least is not at home anymore. So that has changed quite a bit.
So on that, I mean, that's interesting that shift, and you stated that, you know, you find yourself spending more time at school. So how has your preparation changed from that crazy hectic life of mom to where you are now?
Well, I've always been kind of a planner. And so you know, when I had kids at home and had three kids, you know, taking care of them all the time, I always made time to make sure that everything was planned and ready to go. Like, that's just, you know, in fact, I was looking through some old lesson plan books from years past, probably 10, 15 years ago. And I amazed myself at just how thorough I was, because I always kind of looked at it like, you know, I don't know that I was that good at it. But when I looked back at them, I'm like, oh my gosh, I really did do a lot of planning. It depends. Years are different. Some years I plan a lot more than other years. Since my youngest has moved away, my planning definitely has gotten more detailed. Because I have more time to stay at school and think about it. And, you know, I mean, there's nobody here. So what am I going to do but work on things, you know, during the weekend? I mean, I do a lot of hobby type stuff and things with my husband as well. But I find myself doing more work now than I did before. But strangely, it doesn't bother me. I enjoy it because I feel like I have more time to devote to it now, which I appreciate.
So you really get to have grown into a greater appreciation for our field.
Right. Well, and shifting from elementary to secondary is a whole nother world of planning. It's a whole nother, it's just a whole different job, really, from going from elementary for 20 years, where I spent all of my time in one classroom with one set of kids, to now teaching three different grade levels. Math is, it's much different. And so now having that time to really devote to that has been, you know, I really appreciate that.
So let's, you touched on, you know, your time spent at elementary school, which was definitely a daunting task for sure. In those early years when you were there, what was your one aha moment that just kind of seemed to hit you like, oh, okay, now I get it?
Now you get it. The aha moment I think most teachers have is that you don't know how to be a teacher when you get your first job. Like, you have no idea how to be a teacher. They don't teach you how to teach. You learn how to teach by teaching. You learn how to teach by teaching a lesson and then figuring out, well, that didn't go very well. Let's redo that one. Or seeing, looking at the sea of empty eyes and empty faces that you just did all the best things you thought you should be doing, and none of it stuck. And so having to go back and regroup. And so realizing that when you walk into the classroom for the first time, you're at the very first step of learning how to be a teacher. You might have all the education behind you, but boy, those kids really teach you how to do it.
Yeah. So I always found that, that shift from elementary to secondary, I've never had a colleague that experienced that transition. So when you mentioned that to me, it was interesting. And I always often wondered, because we just spoke of your initial aha moment. So in the secondary level, what was your aha moment there?
Well, there's been several, but the one biggest one is understanding that middle school kids need to be convinced that they need this knowledge. That was my one biggest thing. You know, you go in and think, I love math. I love teaching math. This is the best thing I've ever done. And it truly is. But when you have this, group of 20 middle schoolers who just, they math is usually the last place they want to be. And to be able to convince them that this is something that that's worth learning and that's worthwhile, that's been my biggest, oh, wow, yeah, there's a lot more to it than just here's how we're going to, graph a linear equation. Like, there's a lot more to it than that. And it is showing them the value and helping them to understand that, yeah, we really do need to learn this. And yes, you are going to use things like this. And no, you're not going to use this in your life later, but you will use it in your high school life, or you'll use it, in your college career, whatever it may be. That has been like the biggest aha moment for me, I guess, if you will.
Would you say that kind of leads into the next question in terms of, that transition? What was kind of the background that led to that transition?
Well, you mean from going from elementary to secondary?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it started when I taught first grade through third grade for a lot of years. And then I got my reading endorsement, wanted to teach reading. Title was available. So I went into the reading teacher position and started working with now kindergarten through sixth grade, because at that time the elementary school did go through sixth grade. And working with all the grades taught me, number one, that I could never be a kindergarten teacher. There's a special place in heaven for those people, and it's not me. But working with sixth graders, fifth graders, and sixth graders, I thought, wow, these guys are fun. These guys are really fun. And then at the same time, my kids were, you know, before that, my kids were, had gone through middle school. They, you know, went through the whole process. And when you're a parent, they always tell you, you know, you're going to, you know, these are going to be hard years. Middle school years are hard years. And I found that was the most fun I'd ever had with my kids. I mean, they were great when they were tiny, but when they were middle schoolers, they were quirky and weird, and their friends were quirky and weird. And oh my gosh, I loved hanging out with them. So that's kind of what got me into middle school. Isn't as scary as I thought, working with fifth and sixth graders. This is kind of fun. And so that's kind of what started it. And then, found when I was teaching in a classroom, math was what I looked forward to every day. I was a reading teacher, but felt kind of bad because I'm like, well, math is really what gets me, you know, excited for the day. And when the math position came open, I thought, I think I might try for this. This is hard. This is different. I've never done this before, but I think I'm going to try. And I haven't looked back. I mean, this is the best job I've ever had. I mean, I get to work with quirky, weird kids all day long, and weird in the best ways, of course, not, you know, I mean, they're just so fun to work with. And then I get to do math all day. And then at the end of that day, somebody pays me money. I mean, I just can't think of a better way to spend my day. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's awesome. It's always fascinated me because, like I said, I'd never come across a colleague that had experienced that shift. I had a couple that made it the reverse direction, you know, from secondary to elementary. But I always found it interesting that you know, going from elementary up, because it seems like, as I like to tease my wife, who's a preschool teacher, you know, that, you know, herding cats to giving away all this freedom, you know, dealing with the young adults kind of thing. And so it's definitely something that's always been in the back of my mind and curious about how people would make that transition. So thank you for sharing
that. It's definitely like herding cats. I mean, you work with sixth, seventh, and eighth graders all day, and it is like, you know, it's like trying to get ping pong balls that have been thrown all over a room back into the basket. Like that's kind of what it feels like some days. And some days are just super easy. And some days I come out of my classroom and you've seen me. Like it's, I mean, I feel like I've been, you know, run over by a truck three or four times. But for the most part, those days are really good days. So
nice. That's encouraging to hear for sure. Along with that, you know, you've already spoken about your transition from elementary up to this point. What would you say has been some of your greatest challenges as an educator throughout your years?
Well, some of my greatest challenges has just been in the way that behaviors have changed, how kids, I don't know that I can say kids have changed, how their behaviors have changed and how we've adapted to that. That's been, I mean, when I first started, you know, kids, the challenges were always there. Behaviors were always there. I think the behaviors are more intense now. I think that kids have a lot more to deal with now. And that's been a huge challenge, especially in the middle school years. They are dealing with so much and it's really hard to know, you know, how to take care of those kids because you know, I mean, in the end, that's what we're doing. Our job is to take care of these kids and how to do it correctly, how to do it gently, how to do it with compassion and how to keep, you know, any annoyed feelings that I might have building up through the day. And then I have this kid that has a particular behavior, or has a particular meltdown or whatever it is, and keep that separate from my reaction to what is happening at the time, knowing everything I know about the kid and even the things I don't know, and just kind of keeping that, like, that's a huge challenge some days. Some days it's easy and some days it's hard. And some days I feel like I do a really good job. And some days I just, you know, hope that I did and move on. So
my follow-up question is this. You were talking about the challenges of, you know, like with middle schoolers and things. So Mike, I'm really curious, given your background, the structure of the school that you work in is that the middle school includes grades 6, 7, and 8. And it hasn't always been that way. I know that's adding the sixth graders into the building is something that's fairly new. Based on your background and knowledge of elementary and secondary level, what would you say that the inclusion of the sixth graders has magnified those behaviors that you spoke of?
In some ways, yes. But coming from an elementary standpoint, you look at sixth graders and they're kind of like an island all by themselves. They're almost too old to be at the elementary school, but they're too young to be at the middle school. So they almost have to be just in self-contained classrooms wherever they are. Coming from the younger students, we noticed that, sixth graders were different. They were markedly different than fifth graders. And so that started the conversation that maybe we should move them up to the middle school. But at the middle school, watching sixth graders come in, they're so small, they're so tiny and not necessarily in size, but they're just little kids. And you see them with these seventh and eighth graders and you think, oh my gosh, you don't want to let them loose with these other kids some days. And then some days you think, oh my goodness, the behaviors and the things that they're not quite ready for when they hit middle school, the maturity levels vary so much, and some of them are ready for the challenges of middle school and some of them aren't. And, they just kind of have to figure it out as they go along. And that has definitely been something that has been a challenge. And I don't have a great answer for that. I guess it varies in every school and it varies in every community is very different. Another challenge that I've noticed since I started teaching was the lack of technology. In 2000, 2001, we didn't have any technology. Teacher had a computer, that was it. It slowly evolved over the years where we'd have a laptop lab that would visit from the ESD once in a while. And that was really fun. So we'd have like a week where everybody had a laptop and that was a big deal. Or iPads would come in for a month or so. And that was really fun. And then now we have Chromebooks. And that has been a blessing and a curse at the same time, because our kids are, they're constantly wanting to be on their Chromebooks. They're constantly wanting to be on their phones, all those things. So as a challenge, that is also something else that has sort of exploded in the last few years as far as technology use, especially at the middle school. At the elementary school, they have, they have phones, but it's easy to tell them to put them away. No big deal. Middle schoolers are much harder to convince that their phone needs to stay put away. My kids have been really pretty good about that, but I know that there have been problems. So that is also, technology changing as fast as it did there for a while. I'm not sure that anybody was ready for that, especially as far as the classroom is concerned.
Okay. In talking about the challenges and successes and your experience, I'm curious about what your answer might be when we talk about how you feel like your career has evolved over the years.
How has it evolved?
Maybe your role as a teacher, aside from the different grade levels, how has the role of a teacher evolved over the course of education?
Well, of course, the obvious shift from we are here to impart, knowledge and information, and your job is to sit and listen and do what we need you to do, and all that. That has changed tremendously. When I started, it wasn't as much of that. We were looking at more of, how can we serve not only the child, but, the family as well. Now it's there's a lot of different things involved in teaching. It's a lot of not just, I'm here to teach you everything you need to know to have a good base for high school math in middle school, but it's a lot of, I need to be a counselor. I need to be a mom. I need to be I need to watch out for these kids in ways that we weren't doing when I first started teaching. So when I first started, it was just more of, here's my plans, here's my things. We're going to, plan all this fun stuff for you to do. We're going to, work through all these lessons and whatnot. Now it's a lot of, talking to kids about what's going on in their life, being open to listening to them and taking good care of them. And sometimes you have to mother them and care for them before they can hear you to learn. And that's been a huge change. And it's one that I think everyone I teach with has evolved to do well. we have a really great staff, and they all do it very, very well. They're very intuitive. A lot of them are very intuitive and know what these kids need. And that's been a huge challenge too, is to understand what they need, especially middle schoolers, because sometimes they don't even know what they need. And to be able to figure that out with them and for them, to be able to help them and guide them, that's been a challenge. But it's also a huge joy when you talk about successes. Some of my biggest successes have been with middle school kids who didn't communicate and now come and tell me, hey, I've got something to tell you. And it's something that, you know, they've not told anybody else at school, and I get to hear it. That's an honor, and that's a privilege that I take that very seriously, and I'm so grateful that they chose me to tell those things to. That's the best part.
Absolutely. Those are great moments. Anytime kids come back and share that. And I think that's one of the bigger difference that in, you know, when kids are younger, they're people pleasers and they're right there, you know, but I think across the board, one of the things that I heard you say was the importance of the student teacher relationship.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge because they can't learn from me, especially math. I mean, they can't learn math until they know that I'm going to take care of them. I'm not going to abandon them. I'm going to help them. And they have to understand that they can trust me, because it's hard to be wrong in math in front of your friends. That's hard. Nobody wants to be wrong. Hence the hands that don't go up when I am asking a question. And so to be able to cultivate that in my classroom, sometimes it works. And sometimes some days it, you know, kids are giggling at each other, and that's, you know, we go backward a few steps. But to be able to have them trust me, and especially enough to just tell me some things that are going on in their life and share things with me, that's what is, in addition to just, you know, being able to teach the subject, that is also one of the best things about working with this age group, is when they trust you. And when they trust you, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think that is. I think that is key. I would say that would probably one of the aha moments for me in my career is identifying that how important that relationship is with every kid to foster that trust, you know, because they're dealing with a lot of different things, and having kids come in and finally have that one adult that they feel that they can trust to the end of the earth, you know, is huge in terms of getting them to be academically successful, to give them a chance moving forward. So that's great. We're winding down here to the end of this episode. One last piece that I'd like to ask for you to provide to the listeners is, what would be one piece of advice that you would give to either other educators with lesser years of experience or aspiring teachers?
One of the best pieces of advice that I got was from a kindergarten teacher who said, always assume that you are going to be the topic of conversation at someone's dinner table that night. Choose your words wisely. And that has always stuck with me. And so, you know, I mean, that's kind of how I still approach it, is that, you know, what would I want my child to be hearing from their teacher during the day? Like, how would I want my child to be talked to during the day? And that guides how I talk to my students, because I consider them to be my kids. I call them my kids. Like, you are mine. When you walk in the door, you are mine. And I'm going to treat you and, you know, take care of you like I take care of my own kids. But as far as other advice goes, is just be kind to yourself. Be easy on yourself. This is not an easy job. You are going to do lessons that are going to, you're going to hit it out of the ballpark, and it's going to be the best thing you've ever done. And the next day you're going to do a lesson that nobody's going to understand. And you're going to have to do it again. Or you're going to walk in, your principal's going to walk in and do an observation. You think you're doing a great job, and the feedback's not going to be terrific. And just go easy. Just know that you're learning how to do this. And every day, if you're a little bit better, or every year you're a little bit better than you were before, that's what you want to go for. And some years aren't going to be great, and some years are going to be stellar. And it's okay. It's totally fine. As long as you're moving forward even a tiny bit, you're going to be fine.
Oh, that's great advice. Appreciate that. That is definitely what I like about it is it's just real. You know, yeah, and that's what I heard. It's just real advice that as a teacher, you know, who's been at it for 19 years, and whether I'm an aspiring teacher, I think that's something that you can take and grab onto in your own career. So thank you for that. I'd like to thank you for joining us here on Oregon Grow. Appreciate you and all your time, and we look forward to you having a bright future and hopefully chatting with you again soon.
Thank you. I had a good time doing this. Thanks for inviting me.
You are welcome.
For more OEA professional learning opportunities, visit grow.oregoned.org.